It's never too early for Lowe's Black Friday deals. Snag some of our biggest savings of the season right now, like 25% off select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees. And get yourself free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit before the Black Friday rush. Because everyone loves free stuff, right? Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 12/3 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Hey everyone, I'm Ashley Banfield and this is Drop Dead Serious. You know the name Virginia Giuffre, and there is a reason for that. Because she made damn sure the world wouldn't forget it. She was just a teenager when powerful grown men started treating her like property, passing her around like she was some kind of sex toy. She should have been worrying about her grades or crushes or college applications or prom, not billionaires and private jets and how to satisfy them sexually so she wouldn't get in trouble. But that's exactly how she ended up, inside Jeffrey Epstein's orbit and under Ghislaine Maxwell's control. Virginia didn't go public for fame. She didn't want money. She didn't want headlines. She wanted something far more simple, to not be invisible, to make sure that what happened to her and who did it to her couldn't be buried with hush money or sealed court files. Because the truth is, she was just one girl among many abused by Epstein and his friends. And the people who used her, they were some of the most powerful and rich men in the world. And yet, she is refusing to stay silent even in death. And because of that, their secrets are finally starting to unravel. She spoke out in life as much as she could. And now, as I'm sure you're aware, after her death by suicide this year, she's speaking out from the grave in the form of a wrenching memoir that came out just today. I'm recording this on October 21st, 2025. The book is called Nobody's Girl, a memoir of surviving abuse and fighting for justice. And while it is tempting to call her posthumous recollections a tell-all, my friends, I'm afraid they're not. I mean, you will find the names in bold print of some of the famous men who Virginia says sexually abused her, other than Epstein, but only those that she'd outed before in legal documents. The rest can be surmised, some more readily than others. And I'll tell you, the internet has been surmising its brains out all day today. But I decided to go one step further. I spoke with Virginia's co-author, a woman named Amy Wallace, who is keenly aware that even the rich and powerful cannot threaten a dead woman. But they can make life extremely unpleasant for co-authors and publishers. And so we get passages like this, quote, "I came to be trafficked to a multitude of powerful men. Among them were a gubernatorial candidate who was soon to win an election in a Western state and a former U.S. senator." And she goes on to say this, quote, "The second person I was lent out to was a psychology professor whose research Epstein was helping to fund," end quote. Giuffre writes of a quote-unquote heralded statesman to whom she was lent out in New York and Palm Beach, who also, she says, was the oldest man Epstein ever made her service. She also described being handed around to, quote, "billionaire number one and his pregnant wife, as well as billionaire number two, who was a 52-year-old man with thinning brown hair." And if you wonder what Jeffrey Epstein got out of lending Virginia Giuffre out to his pals and others, like swimsuits at a pool party, she has one word for that: leverage. She writes that Epstein had every room wired for video and sound, bedrooms, bathrooms, massage rooms, everywhere. And she says he kept a huge library of all the videotapes. She says he told her those recordings gave him leverage, gave him control over very powerful men, which presumably might extend long after Epstein's death in a New York jail cell back in 2019. And then there's the matter of what she said about Donald Trump. Look, it has never been a secret that Trump was in Epstein's orbit. There are photos, there's videos, you know, they're dancing together, there's flight logs, and Virginia had a job at Mar-a-Lago, right? Her dad had a job at Mar-a-Lago. That's where she met Ghislaine Maxwell. So how does Trump fare in the pages of Virginia's memoir? It might surprise you to hear that he fares very well. She writes that Trump never abused her and that she never witnessed him taking part in Epstein's sex trafficking, which brings me to a wider point. Until his secret life was exposed, Jeffrey Epstein was a paragon, admired not only for his success, but the causes that he championed and the millions of dollars that he pledged to give away. Not that he followed through, because he didn't. The vast majority of people who hobnobbed with Jeffrey Epstein were not, and are not, sex criminals or criminals of any kind. Prince Andrew, on the other hand, while never criminally charged, he settled a lawsuit from Virginia Giuffre in 2022, alleging that she was trafficked to him through Epstein at age 17. In her book, she refers to the prince as Andy and says she, quote, serviced him three times. Once during an orgy involving nine underage girls. Days after that, she says she awoke in a pool of blood with Epstein rushing her to a hospital where she found out that she had lost a pregnancy. There is no word on whether that pregnancy was Epstein's or anyone else's for that matter. She says neither Epstein nor any of the men that he trafficked her to ever wore condoms. But perhaps the book's most horrifying account involves a man Virginia calls only a, quote, well-known prime minister from an unnamed country. She writes, and I quote, Epstein trafficked me to a man who raped me more savagely than anyone had before. He repeatedly choked me until I lost consciousness. I emerged from the cabana, bleeding from my mouth, vagina, and anus. She says that she begged Epstein never to send her back to that man, but that Epstein refused. Earlier today on my News Nation show, Banfield, I talked to Virginia's co-author, Amy Wallace. Amy calls Giuffre's memoir a, quote, predator's playbook. It took 4 years, she says, for them to write it together. And here's our conversation.
I have such a curiosity about the knowledge that Virginia had, the knowledge that Virginia and you wrote down, and then what the finished product was. How much was edited out? Like, how many names of perpetrators were actually edited out for myriad reasons?
Well, you know, the purpose of her book was never to write a list of names. The list of names exists. It exists in the FBI files. It exists in the Epstein files, as we now call them. She had named many names in depositions already that have been made public. There are four different document dumps that there are many, many names in those. The goal of the book was to take you inside the experience of a 16-year-old girl who is swept into this world of predation, Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein trafficking these girls and young women to their friends. And it's Virginia's experience from being abused very terribly in her young life, escaping, becoming a mom and a wife, and then becoming an advocate for others. So obviously, names are of interest to people. Any victim has to weigh the back and forth of the cost and the payoff of naming a name to try to hold your abusers to account, and then what comes with that. So loss of privacy, loss of safety. In Virginia's case, she had a death threat that the FBI called and told her was verified. You know, she had people breaking into her house. So this wasn't a paranoia on her part. She knew that there were dangers. And so with every different scene in the book, I know all the names that are there, but every different scene she had to make a decision about whether or not she was going to rename or name these people. And the book is the result of those decisions that she made.
You know what used to drive me crazy about makeup? That heavy caked on look that made me feel like I was wearing a mask. But then I found Jones Road Beauty and I am obsessed. Their Miracle Balm completely changed my routine. It actually enhances your skin instead of hiding it. You can use it as a highlighter, a bronzer, a blush, or a lip tint. It's like the ultimate no-fuss multitasker. No brushes, no 20-step routine. You just use your fingers, a little bit of balm, and you are glowing in under a minute. This is perfect for busy mornings. It's great for travel days or just after a workout when you're still wanting that your skin but better look. And the best part? Their formulas are clean, high-performing, and packed with skin-loving ingredients. No sulfates, no phthalates, no junk. Just really good makeup that's good for your skin. Right now, Jones Road Beauty is giving our listeners a free cool gloss with their first purchase when you use my code DROPDEADSERIOUS at checkout. Just head to jonesroadbeauty.com and don't forget, use the code DROPDEADSERIOUS. And when they ask you where you heard about them, do me a solid, tell them our show sent you to them. Hey everybody, Ashley Banfield here. Before we jump back into today's case, I want to flag another true crime podcast that you have got to listen to. It's called Scorned, Love Kills. This is a new hit series from Investigation Discovery, one of my favorites. And it's all about when passion flips into poison and when love stories don't end well, they end in body bags. Best part about this one, it's a podcast that comes straight from Investigation Discovery's archives. So it's real audio, it's real investigators and real psychologists, all of them walking you through these jaw-dropping crimes. Like the husband in South Carolina running an underground gambling ring that blew up into cheating and debt and a deadly showdown. Or the perfect couple in Kentucky whose marriage collapsed into drugs, affairs, and a shocking murder no one saw coming. Listen, this podcast is really gripping. It is raw. And if you're into true crime like I am, I know you're going to love it. So make sure you check it out. Scorned, Love Kills, wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, and I would assume anybody who's associated with the book, you're connected, the publishers, everybody is liable if these extraordinarily wealthy and powerful people decide to come after you. So I would have assumed it was a team effort to say, can't name this one, can't name this one, or it's a world of hurt for everybody involved.
Well, I mean, any book like this, and you know this, you know, of course, you fact check, we interrogated it. I mean, it's part of the reason that she hired me. I've been a journalist for 30 plus years. I know how to investigate things. So this was not, I think there's a mystery surrounding a ghostwriter collaboration arrangement. This was not just me turning on my tape recorder and having her speak into it and then transcribing it and then cleaning it up a little bit and putting it into a book form. It involved a lot of extra reporting around her, a lot of documentation from, as I said, court records. I've read all of the depositions, not just hers, but everyone's in the case that have been made public. We talked to a lot of people around her who knew her contemporaneously during the Epstein and Maxwell abuse. Etc. That's not the full summary of our fact checking and our carefulness, but we knew and she knew all along that she was a target. If she raised her hand, she was going to get potentially slammed and everything needed to be buttoned up. And we worked very hard to make that happen.
The hair stood up on my neck when you said the tapes, because I realized that's how you work when you're working with someone as a co-writer or a ghostwriter. You tape those long, long interviews and then you work with the material, which means there's tapes that have names. Will we ever hear those tapes? Will we ever hear those names? Is it a matter of waiting for certain people to die because you can't defame someone who's dead?
I think the question, the place to aim that question is towards the Department of Justice. You know, yes, I know who the names are. Virginia knows who the names are. But so does the FBI and so does the Department of Justice. That's why there's such a clamoring right now for the Epstein files to be released.
I was surprised to see Virginia come out in support of President Trump as much as she did. A lot of people think he's not releasing the files because he's in them. And she's saying, at least when it comes to her, he's not. He wasn't involved at all. I think that's a big surprise to a lot of people. Is that the reaction you're getting, that Trump is cleared as far as Virginia's concerned?
I mean, when we announced the book, we made it clear that Trump was not implicated. Again, as you point out, Virginia was in the Epstein-Maxwell orbit for about 24 months, a little longer. And so she only knows about that period. But in that period, she didn't see Trump in any sort of compromising position. She didn't see him abuse anyone. And in fact, you know, remember, she is procured by Ghislaine Maxwell. She is approached by this posh British woman with a beautiful outfit, beautiful handbag at Mar-a-Lago Spa, where she is working as a $9 an hour towel girl in the Mar-a-Lago Club, that which obviously Trump still owns. So she knew Donald Trump because she worked there. She thought she was honored to work there. It was a beautiful place. And she met him several times because her father also worked there and introduced him to her. And he said, "Do you babysit?" She said, "Yes." He gave her, you know, he had her babysit for some of her friends when they visited the club. So she had fond memories of him from her teenagehood. And then I was there in Australia with her in October, right before the presidential election. And here was this former president running for president again, partly on the plank that he was going to release the Epstein files. And she felt very validated by that. You know, remember, these women have been called liars, sluts, whores for a long time, for many years since they've come forward. And they shouldn't be believed. They shouldn't be believed. And here was a man, a former president, somebody who she hoped would be president again, saying, "I'm validating you. This is wrong. You should, these files should be public. We should make them public." So she was absolutely, you know, galvanized by that. She felt very, very happy about it and hoped that he would win.
If the government continues to be as obstinate as it has been for the last 20 years, will you or publishers or anybody else associated with the project, upon the death of those people who are perpetrators, name them?
I am a hired gun. I am a hired writer. This is not my book.
But you have the info. I know, but you have the info. She told you these things. She reported them to you.
Absolutely. And I've said that in every interview because I want people to know.
And you have the tapes.
I guess I absolutely have the tapes. They're not
anywhere. Would you release them if those perpetrators die?
Anywhere someone could steal them, by the way. They're safe.
Are you able to say anything more about that?
No, but just, nobody can find them, so don't break into my house.
They're in a safe place that no one will be able to sleuth.
No. No one will be able to find them. I feel like this interview is focusing in the wrong place, and I'll tell you why. The point of this book for Virginia was to help other survivors, and there are, you know, You can't walk down the street without encountering half the people you see have been abused. They just don't tell you about it. So she wanted to help people who had been sexually traumatized over their lifetimes to feel less alone. Being sexually abused, particularly as a young person, is something that damages you forever. And her biggest accomplishment, aside from naming names, aside from holding these people to account, is that she managed to have an open heart and want to make the world a better place for all of us, not just for her, for our kids, not just for her kids. She did that. She's an American hero.
I respect what you're saying, and it is a laudable mission that she carried out with this book to help survivors and quote-unquote write the predator's playbook to warn others. I think the only reason I am pressing for that is because there are so many people who are desperate for these Epstein files so that men and women, if there are, will be held accountable, who are not currently being held accountable. So forgive me if it felt like an interrogation. I'm only just being the voice of viewers who are so frustrated with the government that will not hold these people accountable, and hoping for anybody else, survivors who went to Capitol Hill and Virginia Giuffre alike, to do what the government won't do. But I appreciate you coming on and talking to me about this. Thank you so much, Amy.
Of course, of course. And I appreciate you shedding light on these issues. And I don't mind the hard questions. I just think that the focus too often is on putting the impetus on the weakest among us who've already been hurt. And the time now is to put the focus on the stronger among us who have not been doing their jobs.
So here's where things stand. Virginia Giuffre's voice, the one that first cracked open Jeffrey Epstein's world, is echoing yet again, even in her death. Her memoir, Nobody's Girl, is out now, and it's forcing a lot of very powerful people to squirm. The men who thought that her story would vanish with her, they were wrong. Her book is out, and the tapes are hidden, well hidden. But Virginia names names in her own voice, and it is very possible that one day those tapes and the names on them will be released in her voice. Because even in death, Virginia Giuffre is still holding up a mirror to the people who enabled Epstein and to the system that let it all happen. And the question now isn't just who did this to her. It's whose secret is still safe and for how long. I'm Ashley Banfield. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, the truth isn't just serious, it's drop dead serious.